Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what it do, everybody? This is your boy Lee from Lee Keith having real talk. I don't know what episode it is, but I know we got a lot to talk about tonight. But we're going to jump into it. We're going to talk about Brandon Moreno winning the belt. Talk about the Nate Diaz, Leon Edwards fight. We'll get into the Conor Dustin fight. We're gonna give you an early preview of that. But tonight, we're gonna start off a little different. What's up, Keys? You there, bro? Yo, Keys. What it do, bro? You there? But look, to my man Keys get locked in. You know, I'm going to hold it down for a quick minute. I just happened to be on vacation, and I told my boy that, that I wanted to call in, I wanted to talk tonight. But right now, we have some technical difficulties, and I have to refresh to see what's going on with our little site tonight. But I'm going to just keep on talking until I get it up and running. Don't know what's going on, but we're going to get it fixed. As always, you know, it's always fun to do this show. You know, especially when I get to catch up with my boy Keys. You know, he in Boston, all them in Denver. But tonight I just happen to be on the East Coast. And, you know, on a little mini vacay. And I told my man I wanted to talk tonight. So we're going to get on and we're going to talk. We're going to give you guys a good show. It's been probably about 2 weeks. But just hang in there. Give me a quick minute. I do know what's going on. Just got to figure it out. You know, technology here and there. I'm in a place where the Wi-Fi isn't that great. But we're going to work through it, though. We're going to work through it. We're going to get there. Just give us a minute. But hopefully everybody enjoying their summer, man. You know, everybody enjoying their summer, being the people getting back out, you know, being able to do some travel, have a decent family. I know that's what I've been doing for the past 2 weeks. You know, drove cross country, you know, went to Virginia, then went to Carolina for a couple of days. Now I'm in South Carolina. And it's been pretty fun getting back out and, you know, doing that type of stuff, for especially catching up with family. You there, Keith?
Yo,
what up, bro? Yo,
I got you. Yo, my bad. That was rough right there. We had to go into the behind the scenes. You know, the switch panels. We had to go into the breaker box. I mean, I had to go check out the breaker box to figure out why. Your boy Keys couldn't tap into the call. So I was in here the whole time. I was just listening. I felt helpless. I was like, damn, we got to go down to the basement and check out the breaker box, man. They're trying to shut us offline, man. What's up, bro?
Hey, man, I'm hanging, man. What it do, baby?
Yo, I'm chilling, man. I'm gonna leave my laptop over there. We already got that. We're good. I got dinner as we speak, so no issues there. Usually I haven't ate dinner when we're on our show, but this time I have. Let me turn my AC down so there's not tons of feedback on it.
Actually, you good.
Can't even hear it?
Nah, not really.
Yeah, just let me know. When I sit down, it might actually be, it might be some feedback and some microphone there, but okay, we'll switch that real quick. Just let me know if it starts coming through. I'm already self-conscious about it. So. But anyways, the thing is we were having a debate on Twitter last night. Me and Lee were having a debate on Twitter last night, and he was talking about how he was saying how Dustin Poirier got outboxed in the second fight with Conor McGregor. And I was saying how Poirier is more versatile of a fighter. And Lee was saying that McGregor only needs one to do one thing to beat Poirier, and I said I agree. Is that what we talked about?
You said that Conor outperformed Dustin Poirier. No, you said he's going to outperform Dustin Poirier in the next fight. And then I came back and I said that Conor is a one-style fighter. And then you came back and said that if Conor does this, this, and this, then he should win. And then I came back and said, have we ever seen Conor make any adjustments during a fight? And then you asked me, well, if that's the case, what kind of adjustments does Poirier need to make? So, you know, and it was actually a good little debate, man, because it made me think a little bit about Conor's fights, and it made me think about what can Dustin really do in this fight that Conor hasn't seen. Because in the first fight, you know, he got knocked out by Conor. In the second fight, you know, Conor was piecing him up, but then Dustin made an adjustment with the leg kicks. So, what can Dustin do in this fight that Conor hasn't seen? And only thing I can say, and I put this in our on Twitter, is that Dustin needs to work on his hand movement. You can't be a statue when you're fighting a striker. And Keys actually pointed this out to me with Tony Ferguson. He was like, hey, man, you notice that Tony Ferguson has got a lot better in his striking and his hand movement. And I really didn't notice it until I went back and I watched the fight again. And Tony Ferguson has actually worked on his hand movement and his boxing. Now, Dustin has to work on the hand movement part. We all know he got hands. We all know he can box, but he can't afford to get pieced up in the third fight like he was getting pieced up in the second fight. So the only adjustment I would make if I was Dustin is I probably wouldn't shoot in the first round. I'd probably just, you know, leg kick, head movement, you know, get Conor a different look, and then maybe in the second round, maybe shoot. But we'll see how it goes. He definitely needs to improve his hand movement. And that was a little good spirited. That was a good little spirited back and forth we had last night. That was actually pretty cool.
It was a classic style. It was classic, you know, vintage style. But you know, my thing is this: is that I feel like Poirier is not. He's not as much of a threat on the mat as a lot of people would like to make it seem. He's not, and I'm not saying that to say that he's not, because I'm pretty sure he's a jiu-jitsu black belt. I'm not saying that he's not credible. He definitely has a high level of skills on the ground. But I'm just saying, in comparison to McGregor's actual, I'll say this, his transitions on the ground are good. Compared to McGregor's, he's not really a jiu-jitsu guy himself, but he knows how to move on the mat. You can tell, in my opinion, you could tell that he rolls with guys that are doing jiu-jitsu. It makes sense. But I think Poirier's level and what he can do, what he's showing us he could do versus what McGregor can do in that situation, I don't think Poirier is as big of a threat on the ground. As far as the submission, yeah, I think he could submit Conor, but I'm saying as far as I'm not really talking about his jiu-jitsu. I think he could submit Conor. I'm saying more of his wrestling and his grappling, his top position and his pressure. I feel like as far as those elements, that's what I was trying to get to, is I don't feel like that in comparison to Conor's defense against that, what we've seen him, you know, in the Khabib fight, when he was expecting a fight like that, his defense was good. Now, if you're a Conor hater, you're probably going to say his defense wasn't good in the early rounds, but it was good in the early rounds. So if you go back and watch it, you'll see the amount of takedowns that he stuffed. And even the times when he did get taken down, the way he was holding his position so that he wouldn't end up in a very bad, dangerous bottom position under Khabib, was impressive. And I'm saying if Poirier were to take him down, he's not going to have – unless he can go for a quick submission, I don't think he's a threat to Conor on the ground. I really don't think so. I don't think his top pressure is enough to keep Conor there. I feel like Conor will keep getting to his feet, similar to what we saw in the Chad Mendes fight. Conor just kept getting back to his feet and just butchering Mendes on the feet. And I think that would be a similar scenario if Dustin were to try to go more of a heavy wrestling approach in this one and shoot more. Because the first one, we saw him shoot, I think, once, maybe twice. If he were to try to shoot more than that and just keep taking Conor down at will every time, boom, 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 it works the first time, keep on going, I just feel like Conor will quickly get back to his feet every time. He won't gain that many points on the scorecard because he won't have dominant position long enough to be able to gain, you know, too much favor of the judges from it. I don't think he'll be able to do that much with the position. So, you know, I think McGregor, I think this time is going to be expecting, you know, Poirier to shoot. He's fully expecting that this time. I don't think last time he was expecting it. This time expected. This time expected leg kick. So I just don't see, like, McGregor being aware of the last fight, what Poirier is going to be able to do to mix it up this time. I don't see it. He has to come in with, like, some really, like, much better boxing than the last fight to be able to win. That's what I think. I don't think his groundwork is going to be enough.
Yeah, but I think I don't think Dustin is going to use the wrestler to basically try to win the fight. I think he's going to use the wrestler to kind of tire Conor out. Because when you get taken down and you have to carry somebody weight and you got to keep fighting to get to your feet, guess what that means? You're spending a lot of energy. We know Conor has worked on his cardio, but at the same time, the wrestler does still take a toll on the body when you carry your weight and somebody else's weight around an octagon. So I don't think Dustin would use the wrestling to, let's say, outpoint Conor. I think he's going to use the wrestling to try to kind of wear Conor down. And to me, that's a smart little tactic, but it's only smart if you're doing other things in lieu of the takedown and making him carry your weight. You still have to be striking. You still have to be kicking. And you just can't lay on a person. You have to be advancing your position, you know, going for submissions. Make Conor think. Don't have him thinking you're going to take him down just for shits and grins. That's why he defended the takedown so good against Khabib early, was because everybody in the world knows Khabib is a world-class wrestler. So when he started really landing the takedowns in the later rounds, it was because Conor did look a little tired. That was his first fight in a long time. And it just happens to be that Khabib, like you said, Dustin isn't a Khabib-type grappler, wrestler, jiu-jitsu guy, but it's all about having your opponent thinking. You always want to have your opponent thinking rather than fighting. And I think if Dustin can be effective in that department, kind of wear Conor out by making him carry his weight, making him get back to his feet, I think that could play dividends.
Yeah, it's funny too, because I think in 2 weeks you'll be predicting Conor to win too, even after all that analysis.
Most likely, yes. I still think Dustin is tailor-made to get knocked out by Conor, because I think Dustin sometimes he can get a little wild. Although he is a sharp striker, he can get a little wild like in Eddie Alvarez fight. Although Eddie did use a lot of takedowns in that fight. But me personally, I probably pick him to win. But if he loses, done, man. It's like, if he loses to Dustin now, what does he really have to offer? What does he become? Let's just say, hypothetically, this is the Wednesday after the fight, and Conor lost again to Dustin Poirier. What do we say? Are we saying he should come back and fight one super fight every year, or are we saying that he should just go away and do his proper 12 thing? What are we really saying if he loses on this fight to Poirier? So I think he needs this win. I think this win is imperative for him to remain relevant in the sport of UFC.
And that's the reason why. That's the reason. I feel like that's probably the biggest support reason for why I think he dominantly wins the fight. I think he'll dominantly win the fight. And not in the sense that we won't get a fight, but I just think that he'll take over the fight, you know, fairly early on. I don't think it'll be a war. You know, and I usually look forward to those kinds of fights. You know, I hope for it to be a war. I would like to see that, but I don't think that'll happen this time, because I feel like it's, you know, one variable that I can't disagree with is people saying that the money changed Conor and that he just doesn't have the hunger that he had before all the fortune and fame that he got. I can't disagree with that. I agree with that. And maybe they're right. But at the same time, I just feel like Conor in the right mindset is just too dangerous for most of these guys. It's just too dangerous for most of these guys. And including Poirier, and especially including for a guy he's beat before. I feel like it's in the right mindset, you know, really believing and really training hard where I feel like he is, and also having his back against the wall, probably being the biggest of all of those things. Forget the training and all that. The training is obviously very important, but his back against the wall, I feel like, has been, you know, that we've seen that before in his career and come back, you know, in a fight where it's like, okay, you kind of have to prove us something. You have to prove something to us this time, you know. So, you know, the last time I could think about that happening was before he fought the boxing fight. You know, so obviously times were a little bit different then. But at the same time, like I said, I think if he could get back to that mindset of feeling, of really believing, like, okay, regardless of all the money and regardless of, you know, what my life is like, win or lose, forget that. You know, if he could get to the mindset of have to win. Absolutely have to win, you know, like everything depends on it, that kind of thing. And I don't know if he can, but if he can, I think he runs through Dustin. I think he runs through him badly. And it could be a fight that people end up looking at. And then after the fight, and then I think this is the most likely scenario for this fight, is that people, a lot of us, and we'll be on the show the week after this, saying, wow, wow. I think we'll be looking at the performance and we'll be saying, wow, like that is, that was extraordinary. You know, that I feel like that's what we're going to come back and be saying the week after the fight.
Okay. Well, let's jump into this, man. Something that that made both of us happy, man. Brandon Moreno beating Figueiredo for the flyweight belt, man. Talk about it. I know you was a big Brandon Moreno fan going into the first fight. I want to say you even wrote about Brandon Moreno being a fighter to keep our eye on before he even got the title shot, and now he's the undisputed champion. I thought he should have been a champion, but probably would have been disputed, you know, after the first fight. But now he's the undisputed flyweight champion. What's your thoughts, bro?
I mean, first of all, as far as, you know, me having wrote about him, I did write about him, I want to say once or twice. I wrote about him in my articles, and it's no surprise to me. You actually reminded me about that. I forgot about that, but I do remember writing about him once or twice. It's no surprise to me that I did write about him. There's been quite a few guys that I've wrote about that did go on to do, you know, pretty spectacular things. Not every, I wasn't always right. I was wrong about a lot of things and a lot of predictions. But, you know, as far as, like, up-and-coming names, in my articles, I feel like I was pretty spot on with pretty much all of them. You know, so many names you could think of that were prospects at the time, you know, like Molly McCann, like Brandon Moreno, like Cyril Gane, you know, and a plethora of other fighters that I talked about when they were, you know, early prelims fighters early regular prelims fighters that went on and, you know, are doing pretty incredible things. You know, I think Cyril Gane, I'm pretty sure he's in the main event this weekend. If he wins, I mean, I really don't doubt that he's fighting for the belt, the winner of, you know, the next heavyweight title fight. I don't even know who's fighting, but whoever ends up fighting. You know, but just the point overall is I'm not surprised. As far as the prospects, I think I've done well. I've always done had a pretty good eye for the up-and-coming names. But as far as Moreno winning the belt, the first fight I ever watched him was him versus Kaikara Frank. That was his first – I know he had fought in the UFC before that, but that was my first time seeing Moreno fight. He fought Kaikara France, and that actually put both of them on my radar. I was like, wow. I was like, you know, him and France, I was both like – I'm sorry if I'm saying his name wrong, but him and Kaikara France, both of them, I was like, wow, they're both on my radar. And I was like, you know, I think Moreno, he ended up winning that fight by decision, and then he won the title two weekends ago, I want to say, by third round submission. And it just felt like one of those moments where it was like, you know, that's one of my guys, you know, somebody that, you know, you become fans of earlier on when the title fight wasn't quite presented yet. You know, they really weren't in the talks just yet. And maybe they weren't in I don't even think Moreno was – people were starting to notice him, but he wasn't in the talk yet, you know. And so – it's always so nice to have a moment like that. And that really felt good. You know, you would have thought I had family out there. Now, you would have thought, I had family out in Mexico the way that I was celebrating that. I stood up and I said, baby, we did it. You know what I mean? Like, as if it was my brother winning the world title. I was so happy. Like, that moment felt so good because the first time he had the first submission attempt on Figueiredo, and Figueiredo slipped out of it, but then he kind of pulled him back into another submission which was that second one. He ended up getting that one. And even in the first one, I was like, this fight's over, man. I was like, even if he slips out of it, I was like, he's not. Moreno's in such a dominant position at a dominant point in the fight. And I want to say Figueiredo was hurt at that time too. And that was how that situation presented itself. Moreno was really touching up Figueiredo in the boxing exchanges. And that was something that I was trying to tell y'all about in the first fight. I remember I was trying to tell y'all that in the first fight, that I felt like Moreno was really dominating the boxing exchanges. And everybody made me sound like, you know, I think Figueiredo might have had a couple takedowns in the first fight and all this. And, you know, so people wanted to talk about, like, the stats across the board. And I'm like, man, really? I was like, the fight was the majority of it was a stand-up fight. And Moreno pretty much dominated the majority of it. So if you dominated the majority of the stand-up, doesn't that win you the fight? I was trying to tell everybody, I thought he won four rounds, and Figueiredo only won round one in their first fight. And people told me that I was crazy. People said that was too many rounds. I was like, I don't think that was too many rounds. I was like, I think it was either 4-1 or 5-0. But I was like, I was like, if someone didn't give him the first round, that's fine. But I gave Figueiredo the first round, but that's it. That was it. I was having no debate. I think the judges had a tie for the second round, I think. And I think that's how the fight kind of got weird, was where they found it to be, I think they called it a draw. I think that's how that ended up happening, because I want to say the second round they ruled it a 9-9. I think there was like an eye poke or like a low kick.
It was the third round. It was the third round.
Yeah,
they
rated it 9-9.
Because Figueiredo had a point taken away, and then basically he had to win the round for that round to be 9-9. I thought Moreno won that round. I gave Figueiredo rounds 1 and rounds 5. I thought he edged Moreno out in round five because Moreno really wasn't aggressive in round five. And I think he didn't want to get caught. But I have Figueiredo winning rounds one and rounds five. Although in that round three where they took the point away, I still have Moreno winning that round. So even if it was 10-9, 10-8, whatever they wanted to do, I had Moreno winning that round. But I kind of sort of figured that it would be something kind of wishy-washy with the way that with the scorecards in the first fight. But I was just proud of the way Moreno came out in the second fight. He came out and showed us, showed Figgy some things that he didn't see in the first fight. You know, in the first fight, he was definitely a quality striker with good kicks. Definitely had octagon control. But in this fight, when they went to the ground, he was the aggressor as far as, like, going for submissions, you know, advancing his position. So he showed me some things in this fight that I didn't know that he had in his game. But like I said, when me and you was talking, to me, he just won the belt twice. He won it in the first fight, and then he cemented it with his submission over Figueiredo. And I thought Figueiredo would have been, you know, hungrier going into the second fight, being that in his heart of hearts, he know he lost that first fight. So he had to know coming back that, hey, I'm going to have to do some things different. And then he was all the way healthy in this fight. It was some things coming out after the first fight that, you know, he wasn't well and all this good stuff. Plus him and Moreno were both fighting on less than 30 days notice. And I think Figueiredo already has problems making 125. But, hey, man, congratulations to Brandon Moreno, man. Job well done. Way to win both fights. Hopefully they get him. It won't be Figueiredo. I don't know what they're doing with Figueiredo now. I think Figueiredo.
And this is the thing, right? I'm sorry, I got to interrupt you right here. This is the perfect moment. It's a perfect moment. So, the reason why that I was saying to you guys the other day, we were talking, and I was like, yo, I'm sick of rematches. Okay, so first of all, congratulations to Brandon Moreno as well. I wanted to put that out there. I look forward to meeting you one day and congratulating you in person, and maybe you'll even let me get a picture with the belt over my shoulder for my Instagram account, and maybe Lee get one for his family back home with the belt over his shoulder
and meet you
in person.
And yeah,
and be a guest on our show. So we look forward to talking with you very soon, champ. Congratulations. So that leads into my point as well, is that I'm just sick of rematches and trilogies. I'm honestly just sick of it. Like, and that was the fight that really got me to thinking, you know, and also the Adesanya and Whitaker fight. Both of those got me to thinking because I was like, oh, my God. I'm like, you know, this is what happens because you kind of almost want the same guy to win both fights so you don't have to see a trilogy because it's like every time now you have to hope that they don't go 1-1 so the promotion doesn't move to do a trilogy. I mean, we just had to watch – be honest. We just had to hold up the heavyweight division for 3 years because we had to watch DC and Stipe fight for the heavyweight belt for 3 years. For 3 years, they just fought, and there was no other heavyweight title fight. The only guys that have fought for the heavyweight title in the past, I want to say, 2018, 2019, 2020, and 2021. There's only been three guys that have fought for the heavyweight title, Cormier and Ngannou and Stipe. For the past technically 4 years, because you want to include this year as well. So we're finally getting to a point where we might get a fresh heavyweight title fight with Derrick Lewis. Finally, we will get a fresh matchup, and I'm looking forward to this. Yeah, rematches are cool, but I'm getting sick of this, and I almost don't even want to see, you know, let Stipe, you know, fight some other guys. You know what I mean? Let's do some fresh matchups for a little bit. You know, we don't need to just see rematches and trilogies for the rest of our lives, and that's why I actually really hope that they don't do a trilogy with Figueiredo for the next flyweight fight, because point A, I don't think he deserves it. You know, I don't think he deserves it. I mean, it's questionable that he lost the first fight, and then he decisively loses the second fight by getting finished. So already, first of all, that's not grounds for a rematch to me. But either way,
no, it is not.
I feel like the UFC is going to try to promote it as if the first fight, you know, just because the belt stayed with Figueiredo because it was a draw, they're going to try to, you know, they could try to market that as grounds for a trilogy. Like, oh, Figueiredo walked away with the belt the first fight. Moreno walked out with the second fight. So now they got to do, and it's like, man, come on, bro. Like, that's almost starting to remind me of like a WWE storyline. Like when you do those WWE matches and you know it's like 50-50 booking, and it's like, wow, they're going to do a string of matches with these two guys. They're going to have a rivalry. You know, this guy's going to win the first time, and the opposite guy's going to win the second time. And it almost just gets very predictable. And, like, that's what the UFC's starting to feel like with me, is I'm starting to look at the matchups like, oh, my goodness, they're just going to keep on doing rematches. And you can even look at at Rose. If you look at Rose in her division, it's pretty much the same scenario, because who they got at the top of that division? Who are they talking about for fighting for the belt? Okay, Rose.
Wally Zhang.
Okay, they're saying she might fight Wally Zhang. Okay, unwarranted rematch, but you know we'll let that go. Completely unwarranted rematch. Wally Zhang defended her belt, I want to say, one time, and then lost. So and she got KO'd in the first round. So and really, to go back from the strawweights before that, I don't even think Joanna deserved. Actually, no. Yeah, I think Joanna deserved a rematch because she had five titles. She had five defenses, four or five defenses. So when you're in that situation, that's when I do agree with it. I think, okay, let's do a rematch. But when you're just going to keep doing rematches when it's like short-term champions, and then just because they're on a tiebreaker, we have to do a trilogy, it's like, really, man? Like, when they were doing the DC and Stipe thing, I wanted them – you remember me talking about it. I wanted both of them to take fights in between. Like when Stipe lost to DC the first time, I was the one saying, okay, I think Stipe should, you know, move on for a little bit, maybe fight Derek Lewis or somebody like this, and then go fight, you know, go get a win over another top competitor. And then, you know, after that fight, you get through that one, then rematch. But, you know, I was the one going for that. And then same thing with DC, you know, once DC got knocked out by Stipe, I was like, yo, let Stipe fight somebody else, man. Like, let's have Cormier fight somebody. You know what I'm saying? It was like they always have to just go to this one-to-one narrative and, oh, let's do a trilogy. And the same thing with Conor and Poirier. It's like, wow, like we have to do, you know, an immediate trilogy for this one because they're one-on-one. And it's like, wow. So then what's going to happen with Adesanya and Whitaker? So I want Whitaker to beat Adesanya, but I almost don't want him to beat Adesanya at the same time because then what's going to happen? They're going to say, oh, they're one-on-one, so now we have to do a trilogy. And it's like, man, that's so predictable. Is that not predictable? Am I speaking nonsense here?
I think you're kind of overthinking it. I think we need to look at it a different way.
Oh,
hey, Keys. Keys. No, follow me real quick. Maybe the UFC divisions aren't as deep as we think they are. Just because they have a lot of fighters don't mean that they have a lot of title contender fighters. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
like, I'm looking at Brandon Moreno's division, right? All right, Brandon Moreno's a champ. Figueiredo is ranked number one contender. And then you know the next possible names that probably me and you know are Alex Perez, who's ranked number four, Joseph Benavidez, ranked number five. Then you got Kai Kara France at number seven. And then you got Tim Elliott at number 10. Now, if you don't do Moreno versus Figueiredo, then you have to do Moreno versus Askar Askarov, who was, I want to say, was suspended at one time. Did he get suspended or did he get sick or something? Something happened with him. So you had him
at number two. I think Askarov got suspended.
Yeah, I think he got suspended too. And then you got Alexander Pantoja at number three. So, me personally, with Askarov, I want to say he's out, man. I would probably have Moreno fight Pantoja, but I don't know whether or not they have already fought already. I would probably have them two fight, and maybe Figueiredo. I don't know, man, but this division has some names on it, but most of the names on it, I don't know. So this flyweight division needs to grow, but I wouldn't do Figueiredo versus Moreno. I would probably make Figueiredo fight Askarov or Alex Perez or Alexander Pantoja, and I would hope that maybe Brandon Royval and Kai Kara France could possibly move up. Maybe even Tim Elliott could move up. So that being said, I think it's because we're seeing all these trilogy fights because the UFC, they have a lot of fighters, but they don't have a lot of contending fighters. What was the one that you said? You said Rose Namajunas. Okay. All right, so
yeah,
Rose,
you look at that. Everyone that they want her to fight is someone that she's already fought. Like,
exactly.
They want her to fight Joanna. Okay, she's already fought her twice. She already beat her twice as well. You're really gonna try to sell me a third Joanna fight when Rose already beat her twice, really? And then the other one they want to fight is the one that Carla Esparza, and she already fought her too, way back. And then the other one is Wiley Zhang, and she already fought her. And if you ask me, I don't even think Wiley Zhang deserves a rematch because she only defended the belt one time at max two times. I think it was one time, actually, but she defended the belt one time and then got head kick KO'd into the stratosphere in the first round. So how are you going to tell me that level of work? Wiley Zhang needs to go back to the drawing board, man. I think Wiley Zhang needs to go back and fight Joanna or fight, you know, Carla Esparza, one of these other girls. They need to go fight each other, I think. We need a fresh matchup. I think you do Zhang and Esparza next, and then you have Joanna, you know, go back to the drawing board. Joanna, who she get the title fight? She fought, I think Waterson was her last fight. She fought Michelle Waterson like a year ago, and that, to me, isn't even a fight that warrants a title shot. Waterson is good, but she's not, I don't think she was, she's not at the top of the division like that. So I think all those girls need to go back to the drawing board and, you know, take another fight. I don't really care who it is, but Joanna needs to get at least another win. And then you have two of those girls that haven't fought, haven't fight each other. And let Rose get a fresh matchup, man. Come on. This thing's getting old here.
I think what needs to happen, bro, is I think that we need to have Wally Jam versus Yan Dioxin. That's one versus four. And I want to see Joanna and Carla fight some of these younger girls. Man, I'm looking at this list, Amanda Ribas, Verna Jandroba, you know, and I think Angela Hill has got better, man. I think she's got better. But this division, if you really look at it, that's what I was saying about the flyweight division. There's five names in this division that you definitely know. Wally, I ain't even named Rose. Wally Zhang, Joanna, Carla Esparza, Mackenzie Dern. Of course, you got Claudia Gadelha, Michelle Waters, Tisha Torres, Angela Hill, Felice Harry. But when you look at the top part of this division, basically Rose has beat all of them, and she's the champ. All the people she has fought is the number four, number five, and number six. Being that she already beat Carla Esparza, Joanna, and Wally Zhang, get her the number four person. At least you're getting the number four person some shine, and they're warranted because they're in the in the top five. So I think the trilogy thing, I don't think they doing it to irk your nerves, Keys. I think they doing it out of necessity because they know that their divisions aren't really full of title contenders. There are only two divisions full of title contenders, 135 and 145. 135 is bantamweight, and 155 is the Charles Oliveira division. Those are the only two divisions that you have guys from the champ all the way down to probably number 12 that could possibly be the champs in that division. All the other divisions, they only top five strong. The rest of the guys got to prove to us that they worthy of being in championship matches. And I think that's why you get so many trilogies or rematches, is because the UFC know that, and it's probably they're thinking to themselves, we can't sell this to the fans. But at the same time, if you market it right and you make us fall in love with somebody that's in the bottom half of the top 10, guess what? We'll grow with that person, just like we grew with Conor, just like we grew with John Jones, just like we grew with Cody Garbrandt, just like we grew with Henry Cejudo.
And it's funny that you say Cody Garbrandt, because he was ranked number 8. I'm pretty sure Cody was – he's one of the examples of a guy that also Kevin Lee is. Kevin Lee fought for the interim belt, and they almost made – because Kevin Lee came very close, if we're being honest, to beating Tony Ferguson at one point in their fight. And they almost would have just made Kevin Lee into one of those guys at the top of that division. If he had beat Ferguson and the tables were turned, he would be one of those guys right now that we're mixing in and out of these matchups. And those are the type of fights that create those fighters. You kind of have to give guys a chance at some point. Like, Ferguson was probably the number 2 guy at that point. He could have said, what do I look like fighting Kevin Lee? I think Kevin Lee was number 7 when he fought him. Well, he probably could have said, what do I look like fighting Kevin Lee? But guess what? You put Ferguson in there, and then we realized something about Kevin Lee in that fight. And know what we realized is that, oh, man, Kevin Lee actually can scrap with the best guys. Like, he actually is a really game fighter. And I think a lot of people, and including myself, you know, before his Michael Chiesa fight, Kevin Lee wasn't really on my radar. I didn't really know much about the guy. I think I knew who he was, but I really wasn't really checking for his fights like that. But it was like once he fought Chiesa, it was like a guy that, okay, you're kind of on the threshold. You're getting kind of higher up in the division fighting Chiesa. And once he gets that win, that's the fight that, okay, now he's on my radar. Then he fight Ferguson. Has a good fight with Ferguson, you know, almost wins. You know, but if he did win, same thing with Wiley Zhang. Wiley Zhang got the shot versus Andrade. Wiley Zhang, they had to market that match to us. And then look how Wiley Zhang is now in the conversation at the top of her division, and Jessica Andrade is not. Wiley Zhang is in the conversation at the top of the strawweight division. Andrade was actually the strawweight champion at one point, and she's not in the conversation at the top of that division. How crazy is that? But that's kind of the thing that you need to do, is I feel like the UFC is doing this a little bit wrong here, is they're missing the ball. You know, they're kind of dropping the ball on not giving out more opportunities. It's not just about rushing one guy up. Like, give a guy that, you know, has a really strong performance a title shot. You know what I mean? Not everybody – you don't need everybody to be on a 5-fight win streak to fight for the belt. Like, give a guy a shot. You know, Kevin Lee had strung together a couple win, you know, he had a win streak, I'm pretty sure, but, and Cody Garvin had a win streak, but not everybody can be on a win streak at the same time. Like, sometimes, what if a guy.
True.
Yeah, go ahead.
True.
Go ahead.
True. I totally agree with what you're saying. Because if you are considered a top guy, that's you fighting. Top competition. So you're not going to always get who's the guy that Sean O'Malley knocked out? And I was
Thomas
like, man, come on, man. No, not him.
Oh, Eddie Wineland?
The old guy. Yeah, Eddie Weiler. You're not gonna always going to get an Eddie Weiler in the fight, you know, or Darren Elkins. You know, some of these guys are losing because they're fighting the top-ranked guys, and their division requires them to fight top-ranked guys. 155 is a division that even if you fight the number 12 guy, that guy could possibly be the champ. So on what you on that, you have to give a guy that's number 8, maybe number 9, you got to get him a chance to prove that they deserve to be, you know, in the top 5. But the UFC now, they let fighters pick their fights, Keys. The fighters are now picking who they want to fight, who they want to fight, when they want to fight. And guess what? A top 5 guy rarely chooses to fight a guy that's number 10 and below. He wants to fight somebody above him. And that's why we don't get to see some of these younger guys, these upcoming guys, fight these contender guys, because the contender guys don't want to either take that chance or they feel like they're fighting down. And the UFC really needs to get back to start to the original matchmaking. Get back to your original matchmaking. It was always 2 versus 3, 4 and 5, 6, 7, or 6 and 8, or 10 versus 8, stuff like that, where guys are given the opportunity to fight their way up in the rankings or lose their way down in the rankings. Instead of giving us all these rematches and unwanted trilogies and, you know, let's do Izzy versus Blachowicz so Izzy could possibly be a two-weight division champ, which was unwarranted. He really didn't deserve that. So, but now, yeah, man, I'm kind of over the trilogy fights, man, especially when they coming by so fast. DC and Stipe for what? The trilogy fight, what, 2.5 years, 3 years?
Yeah, theirs took 3 years to. They fought in 2018, and then they did the rematch. They waited till 2019 to the rematch, like a whole year later, and then they waited like a whole another year to do the third fight. But my problem with that was that Stipe fought Cormier 3 times in a row. Like Cormier went out and actually he did fight Derek Lewis in between. I think he fought Derek Lewis in between his rematch with Stipe, so I did appreciate that we did get another matchup to give another guy a chance. But Stipe,
but that was on 20 years old
and that's not anybody's fault. I'm just saying that I'd like to see more fresh matchups overall, regardless of how. I just like to see more fresh matchup. Can we just get the matchup, like, if a guy called the guy out, like, I like to see guys just stop fighting those guys that call them out. Like, it's kind of tiring that it's like, if you're not in the top 10, no, if you're not in the top 5, they're not even considering you. We need to start considering some top 10 guys. A champion should be willing to fight anybody in the top 15, period. If you're ranked and there's nobody there to fight, especially when you're looking at guys like Usman. Know what I'm saying? I kind of respect Usman for wanting to fight Michael Chiesa. In one regard, you could say, oh, Usman wants an easy fight versus Chiesa. Why doesn't he fight Covington? Well, realistically, he already knocked out Covington, right? I want him to rematch Covington, you know, because I think that's a very competitive matchup. I'd like to see it again. But other than that, I think you gotta cut my man Usman some respect for calling out Chiesa. I want to say Chiesa's like number 7 or number 8 rank, maybe number 6 rank. And he's calling out him, so you don't really see champions doing stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? And I like that. You know, I'd like to see more of that in divisions. Guys, the champ should be willing to fight anybody in the top 15. If they already cleared out the top 5, they should be willing to go into the top 10 or into the top 15 and find a contender, because that's how you make new stars. You know, you give someone a chance, they might make it happen. Not everything is a mismatch.
Hold on, Keys. Can you repeat that part about making what? Making what? New stars.
I don't remember. Yeah, making new stars. Yeah, that's how you make new stars. You got to give guys a chance. Guys and girls a chance.
Yeah, man. But look, man, you know, we could talk all day about this. I know why the UFC is doing it, but at the same time, you have to have confidence in your younger guys that you're pushing. They're on your roster for a reason. Everybody on your roster isn't a early prelim or a prelim fighter. Some of them guys are earning their stripes. They're doing it the right way. You have to give them a chance on the biggest of stages to see what you have in that person. But let's move on, man. I think 2 weeks ago was your first time seeing Leon Edwards fight. So what did you think?
That's actually funny that you remembered that. Yeah, that was my first time seeing Leon Edwards. He's really good, man. The dude is really good. He's, you know, I felt like when I was watching him, you know, a lot of people were talking at the end of the fight. I had, like, a little fight party. I probably had, like, 7 or 8 people over. But, you know, a lot of people had different ideas at the end of the fight about how the fight was. But all I was really saying was Edwards looked like at the end of round 5 that he could go another couple rounds. Now, I feel like he could have done another 3-round fight after that fight. He could have went – I think he could have done 8 rounds. At that pace, he looked good to me. His arms, he didn't look like his arms were shot out at the end of that fight. Maybe they were, and I was misjudging it. But his cardio was good, man. He's a really good fighter. He had I feel like there was a lot of boxing. I didn't really see, like, all the things that I thought I would see from him. I didn't, like, see any, like, spinning back fists. I thought people said he throws, like, a lot of elbows and I didn't really see that kind of stuff, but I did see a lot of boxing from him, and he's a very well composed fighter with a good cardio. He's a dangerous guy.
I think you didn't see a lot of that because of the opponent. Nate Diaz is a wily veteran, and Nate Diaz is super slick. You don't want to make any mistakes against Nate Diaz because he will either knock you out or he'll submit you. And I thought Leon Edwards showed a lot of people how good of a technical fighter he can be until that 5th round. Leon, if you're listening, bro, you can't fight a 5th round as if you're winning a fight. Fight the 5th round as if there's a fight still to be won. Because he got real relaxed in that 5th round and Nate caught him. Nate had him rocked in that 5th round. I think if that was the 4th round and Nate had him rocked, I think he gets finished in the 5th round. Because Leon just wasn't responding to that adversity well to me. I hate to say this about fighters, but sometimes it's true. Some fighters are front runners. And I think Leon Edwards is a front runner fighter. He fights well when he's in charge of the fight. That's not a knock on him. That's not a knock against fighters that fight well when they're winning. But it's something that you have to be wary of because he's angling for a title shot against Usman, and you're not going to be a front runner against Usman. Usman is going to come out and do what he does. He's going to fight at his pace. Usman is going to negate Leon's reach advantage with his jab, with his foot movement, with his head movement, and with his wrestling. People keep forgetting that Usman is a wrestler. That's how he won the belt. He won the belt by dominating Woodley on the mat. But as of recently, his striking game has got better, and he's been showcasing that. I have no problem with that. I'm glad Leon Edwards was able to showcase his skills as a technical fighter, but there's a lot of things that he did in that 5th round that he needs to clean up. I don't know whether or not the UFC is going to give him a title shot because I say it so well on Twitter with Usman. Usman has basically called out Chiesa, Kobe Covington, and today I saw somewhere on Twitter where he called out Nate Diaz. I don't know why he would call out Nate Diaz when Nate really hasn't done anything. Nate is just, in my opinion, and Keys can attest, that I'm probably one of the biggest fans of Nate and Nick Diaz. As of right now, Nate Diaz is just a name. He's just a name. He's only won one fight, and that was the Pettis fight, probably in the last 5-6 years. Because he's lost to Masvidal, he's lost to Leon Edwards, he's lost to, he lost at 170 to somebody else.
Yeah, so, he lost to McGregor.
Yeah, he lost to McGregor. It's just that he's just a name now. He's a big name, and he's going to warrant you a big payday, but beating Nate is not like it used to be. Beating Nate used to be a thing, whereas now beating Nate is like become the norm. So I like that my man Keys got to see my man Edwards fight. I like Leon Edwards, but he has to work on being a finisher. Being a finisher in the UFC equates to people liking your fighting style. When you're a technical fighter, people tend to label you as boring. And nobody wants to be labeled as boring in the UFC.
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, yeah, I think, you know, I think Leon Edwards, you know, that's another thing that to me, it's irritating because Leon Edwards, you know, Nate Diaz is kind of like you said, he's just a big name to fight, and I think that's the reason why you see Usman, you know, trying to take jabs at Nate Diaz. I mean, I think Diaz was also taking jabs at Usman, so he probably might have been even responding to some of the jabs that Nate was already taking at him. Because I think Nate just wants to try to lure out, like, the biggest fights, you know, even if he loses, which is, you know, he kind of has the star power to do. You know, people are always interested in him fighting guys kind of regardless of, you know, he's kind of like McGregor where it's like neither one of them really need to do that much as far as in the octagon to still be, like, wanted in those big fights just because of their name and their reputation and what they've done in the past, but not necessarily of what they've done lately. They're both kind of in a similar position as far as that column, you know, right now. But, and no, I don't want to see that trilogy either. So, no, that's not what I was about to say. Not at all. So, and I think, while I think they're making Edwards into the Ferguson of the 170-pound division by just making him fight over and over and over again, I do think he should take another fight before fighting for the belt. Because that wasn't really, like, he was winning the fight the whole time, but I still feel like that wasn't really, like, a title shot type of performance. Like, that would win you a title shot. I feel like that was kind of a slack performance, you know, for what would probably give you a title shot. I don't really feel like that was really, like, it didn't really get anybody out of their seats, I don't think. So, you know, I think you should take another one. And let Usman fight whoever he's going to fight, and then, you know, maybe we'll revisit that. But I'm just so sick of rematches, man, that I'll probably come up with anything at this point just to try to say why I don't want to see a rematch. The only one that I want to see, the only one of these fights that I'm, like, genuinely excited is, like, you know, after McGregor and Poirier is just a Whitaker getting his rematch with Adesanya. And I feel like that one overall is one of the more warranted rematches where we saw the, you know, Whittaker's put on excellent performances like almost his entire career. And especially his whole run at 185.
Hey, yeah. Keith, how many fights have Whittaker won since he lost to Izzy? At least three, right?
Yeah, so, I want to say three.
That is a warranted rematch. Why? Because Whitaker has put in the work to warrant the rematch, to say he don't even have to say that he wants a rematch. Whitaker has earned a rematch. Big difference.
Nah, you're right. You're right. And that's, you know, but even before, even when he was, while he was a champion, I feel like, yeah, while he didn't really have, like, much of any title defenses, he had pretty much, like, one title defense, and he was plagued by injuries. But even during that time, if you just look at the performances he had, just look at those two fights with Yoel Romero were both, like, all-time great fights. Like, and
they were.
Really, like, incredible performances from a champion. Like, you just look at his – I didn't see their first fight, but people said that he looked incredible. And the second fight, I thought he looked incredible. I thought it was a really competitive fight. Romero looked really good too, but Whitaker handled himself like a true champion. You know, fourth and fifth round, you know, he came out and did what he had to do, and he was hurt at multiple times in that fight, but he got through the adversity, which is funny that you were just saying that about Edwards, how you felt like he might not be a guy that does that well when he's not really in control of the fight, and when he's facing adversity, he might not do that well with adversity. Kind of like McGregor doesn't really do all that well with adversity. We see him quit, you know, many times. And there's guys like that. But with Whitaker, you really don't see that. You know, Whitaker, when he lost to Adesanya, I think he was unconscious at that point. So he didn't really have much of a choice to battle through that adversity. But he also fought that fight. Didn't even seem like him fighting. So he was definitely, like, not himself that night. So I don't really even count that fight to be – I don't even look at that fight, to be honest. That's not even relevant to me because that wasn't even Whitaker fighting that night. I don't know. That wasn't truly him. I'm telling you. He was under his caloric intake or something, man. There was something off about Whitaker. He didn't eat dinner that night. He was like me when I don't eat dinner and come on the show and I'd be losing my train of thought. That was basically Whitaker when he fought that last one. But, you know, we see him look incredible performances last three. So, like I said, that's the only one that I'm excited to see. After this July 10th bout, that's the only rematch that I really want to see. Every other division, I'd like to see a fresh matchup, please. Usman, let's do a fresh matchup. July 10th, if Wonderboy, this is my vote. I say if Wonderboy wins that fight and beats Gilbert Burns, let's do Usman versus Wonderboy. That's the fight that I'm going to say. If Burns beats Wonderboy, I don't know, because they just fought, so I don't really know if I'd want to see that rematch already. But I think if Wonderboy beats Burns, which, you know, it's 50-50, either one could win, but if he does, I think you do Usman and Wonderboy for the sake of having a fresh matchup. Every division, fresh matchup.
All right, I'm going to go another way with that. I think if Burns wins, then you got to go Burns versus Edwards. I think the winner has to fight Edwards, and that's your title eliminator. Whoever wins that fight has to fight Edwards, and that's your title eliminator, and the winner gets Usman. But I want that to be Wonderboy versus Edwards, both are from the same country, fighting to see who goes on to fight for the belt. I think that gives you storyline, that gives you backstory, that gives you everything you want in a purposeful fight. So if we could get that, I'll sign on for that. But, bro, I got to ask you this. You got your boy Cyril Gane. I know we kind of went over. We're about to wrap it up, folks, so just stay with us about a couple more minutes. You got Cyril Gane versus Volkov this weekend. Who you got?
Can you hear me good?
Yeah, I hear you, bro.
All right, so first of all, everybody, I just want to tell you that your boy Keys has a single dropping tomorrow at 4 p.m.
Man, I was going to get to that.
So, yeah, but I just want to say it real quick, and then we'll get to it. But yeah, tomorrow 4 p.m., so look out for that. Cyril Gane and Volkov, I think Cyril Gane is going to put on a spectacular performance. I think he's going to dominate Volkov, and then we'll see what happens after that. I was watching the little clip from the Mac Life earlier. They interviewed Volkov, and he was saying that, you know, it sounds like he anticipates that he keeps the fight staying on the feet. And we all know Cyril Gane doesn't mind keeping the fight on the feet. He is a kickboxer, so we all know that. And if that fight's going to go that way, I think Cyril Gane's going to dominate him. He's going to put on a spectacular performance. And we're going to be talking about him here next week and saying, wow.
If Volkov said that, I'm calling it bullshit, because Volkov is a better submission fighter than Cyril Gane. Volkov needs to not stand up with Cyril Gane. For people that don't know Cyril Gane is probably the most athletic heavyweight fighter in the UFC, and he uses his athleticism to his advantage inside the octagon with his speed, with his feints, with his head movement, with his side-to-side lateral movement. And most guys that get in there, they really don't understand athleticism until they fight him. Volkov, if you try to do that, if you try to keep the fight on his feet, Cyril Gane will outclass you with his athleticism. You need to take him down, make him uncomfortable. I think Cyril Gane is playing a little bit of gamesmanship with what he said. I know Keys are going to go with Gane, and we really don't like to agree, but I'm going to begrudgingly say Volkov wins via submission, but this isn't the end of Cyril Gane if he loses this fight, because that guy is so good, and he's so athletic, and he has so much bounce in his step that he could possibly be the heavyweight champion one day. But I'm going to take Volkov in the submission this weekend against Cyril Gane. Like my man Keys said, I was going to save it for the closing of the show. My man Keys has a single coming out tomorrow. Proud of my man sticking to his guns, still doing his music, very driven about his music. Please give him your support. You can follow him at, what is it, Keys Real Talk?
So, yeah, at Keys Real Talk on Instagram.
At Keys Real Talk
on Twitter as well. Everything's pretty much at Keys Real Talk.
Yeah, so follow
him.
Any
socials at Keys Real Talk.
Yep. So follow him on Instagram, IG, to get more information about his single. Like I said, I'm proud of my man. Support him. And any last words, bro?
Nah, that's it. Everybody have a good rest of the week. I'm probably going to head out to Six Flags this weekend. So I haven't been there in a couple of years. That's about to be really fun. So I'm looking forward to that. Everybody have a good weekend, and I appreciate those listening to the show. I know we didn't get on last week, but, you know, we had some other things going on. But we came back, and I feel like we tried to put on a better show, in lieu of that. So, you know, that's we take pride in doing that, and that's just what it is. So, yeah, I appreciate everybody, and have a good night.
That's right. Like I said, I'm on vacay, but, you know, met my boy Keys wanted to chop it up. So, you know, I was like, yo, let's do it. And I'll be on vacay next week, but we'll probably be here, same bat channel, same bat time next week. So I'll be headed back to Tours Denver next week, like I said earlier in the show. And, you know, it's been great coming back east, seeing my family, you know, first time getting out since the pandemic. But it's been definitely eye-opening, it's been thrilling, it's been tears of joy, it's been hugs of joy, hugs of love, goodbyes filled with tears, goodbyes filled with love when I had to tell my family I see them, you know, on the flip side, but, you know, life keeps moving. Like I always close the show, positive people with positive energy yield positive results. And we always end our show with a big peace. See you next week. see y'all next week. Leah Keys signing out.